So that's what I've been trying to do. And we've met with a certain degree of success. I can report to you in 1986 that the rate of hospital admissions has now dropped to such a low level that last year there was a record low number of hospital bed occupancy. Only 43% of beds were occupied, which means that there are now more empty beds than beds filled with patients, which can only lead to an improvement in the public health. I refer to hospitals as the temples of the religion of modern medicine. I call them temples of doom because you can pick up germs in the hospital you cannot get anywhere else in town, as you all know. And last year, another piece of good news, 25% of obstetrician gynecologists had to give up their practice because of the rising malpractice insurance rates, which in some states last year reached 105,000, and in 86, the projection is it's going to reach 156,000, which means that maybe all the obstetricians will have to give up their practice, and then birth can return to the safety of the home at the hands of midwives instead of at the dangers of obstetricians. I can see I'm really in the right place because my five grandchildren were all born at home, and they were born by midwives. And furthermore, they were nursed for long periods of time, which infuriates pediatricians because they think that prolonged breastfeeding is a minor form of sexual deviation. And just like they think that taking a baby to bed with you is a major form of sexual deviation. On one of my Donahue appearances, I was privileged to listen to a woman named Tina Thevenin, who wrote a book called The Family Bed. And she argued that it was a good idea to take your little babies, particularly infants, in bed with you. And opposing her was a psychiatrist. And he argued it was a terrible idea. He talked about the Oedipus complex and infant sexuality and all those things that I don't understand too well. And Donahue turned to me and he said, Bob, what do you think? And I said, I agree with the psychiatrist. Psychiatrists should not take their babies to bed with them. I listened to Gary talk about the balloons. And I got asked last night on the radio, what do I think of balloon angioplasty? And my answer was based on what's happened, as Gary alluded to the stroke operations these days. Because now that the brain bypass has been discredited, the doctors tried to turn to the carotid endarterectomy. And that was also discredited. The brain bypass bad news came from the University of Western Ontario, Dr. Henry Barnett. The bad news about the carotid endarterectomy came from the University of Indiana. But that doesn't mean the doctors gave up their efforts, because one of the rules in medicine, as you all know, is that doctors never give up one dangerous procedure until they have an even more dangerous one waiting in the wings. Take a look at how doctors had to give up tonsillectomy. They turned to tympanostomy. Take a look at how the breast surgeons had to give up radical mastectomy, which made me nervous. I couldn't figure out how they were going to make a living. Not to worry. They turned to prophylactic mastectomy because doctors believe that the fewer organs a woman has, the less likely she is to get cancer. Well, when the two stroke operations were discredited, doctors turned to using balloon angioplasty in the carotids. And on the basis of no evidence, of course. And my conclusion is that since I have watched balloon therapy now for 35 years, beginning, as some of you will recall, a long time ago when they used to put balloons into the esophagus for esophageal varices, and then later they put the balloons into the peripheral vessels and later into the coronary vessels and now into the carotids. And they, if you remember, they put balloons into the stomach to fool your stomach into thinking you'd already eaten. So my conclusion is that no circus is complete without balloons. And the circus of modern medicine is no exception. And that in the circuses, in the real circuses, some clowns wear masks. In the medical circuses, some clowns wear face masks. In the medical circuses, they wear the surgical masks. And just to show you how much of an entertainment the whole thing is, they don't call them operating rooms, they call them operating theaters. So I watch the great strides that we are making. I watch the obstetricians disappear, but that doesn't mean we're home free, because they're now turning to gynecology. And last year they removed a record number of uteruses. 800,000 hysterectomies were done last year in this country. So my argument is that people have to be very, very careful of doctors. And the best thing to do is not to go to them at all. So how successful is my side in this? Well, as I watched the last couple of years, I get a lot of satisfaction. As you all know, the chaos and confusion that characterizes medicine today, when doctors can't figure out what to do. And they're turning to all these alphabetical solutions because they think that the DRGs and the HMOs and the PPOs and PSRO, I can't keep track anymore, they think that that's going to save them. And even the government thinks that that's going to help, because the government mistakenly believes, and a lot of doctors believe, that doctors are Marxists. They don't understand the doctors are not really in it for the money, even though the money goes the right way. I believe that doctors do what they do because they believe in what they're doing as a result of their training. And it is not easy to take a perfectly normal human being and turn him into a doctor. It takes a long time. He has to be carefully trained how not to communicate. I learned how to do that. Because I learned during my tenure at medical schools how to make up tests. I learned to make up tests so that a doctor never has to write a word, a sentence, a paragraph. All he has to do is to blacken in the spaces between the lines. And then he learns that instead of talking with a patient, you give him the answers you learn in medical school. If you want to take out a uterus, what do you need your uterus for? It's just a sac for cancer. Or my all-time favorite, I'm taking out the baby carriage but leaving in the playpen. If you want to take off a breast, your husband loves you for yourself, not for your breasts. If you're faced with an older person, what do you expect at your age? If somebody asks you what are the side effects of the drug, it's one in a million. Or you take a risk every time you cross the street, because doctors think that when you cross the street, you're blindfolded. They don't understand that you have a chance to look in both directions, because they won't give you that kind of an opportunity. So I watch what's happened in the last couple of years, the public furor over infant immunizations, because my grandchildren have had no immunizations. I gave up my belief in immunizations in the late 1960s. And I never thought it would become a public issue. But thanks to the media, who are bringing the truth to the American public, now people know that the DPT vaccine can cause mental retardation and epilepsy and cerebral palsy and sudden infant death and on and on. And I watch the companies go out of the vaccine business, and I applaud. I watch the disappearance of drugs from the market. Eli Lilly's Oriflex, Geigy's Tanderil, and impending right now in the United States, Feldene, Pfizer's Feldene. I love the comment of the president of Pfizer, who, when confronted with the evidence of 220 Feldene deaths from renal toxicity and gastrointestinal hemorrhage, said, "Why are they picking on Feldene? It's no different than the other antiarthritics." He's 100% right. So my conclusion is that the rheumatologists have decided they are going to solve the problem of arthritis by getting rid of the arthritics. I watched the disappearance of the obstetrical drugs, Bendectin and high-dose Marcaine, the major drug used for epidural anesthesia. And this year, I saw something happen that I did not believe was going to happen in my lifetime, the disappearance of the IUD. Because you can no longer get the Lippi's Loop and the Dalcon Shield and the Copper 7, which means that millions of American women are going to be spared pelvic inflammatory disease and ectopic pregnancies and blocked tubes and all the other complications. Thank you. And I plan, on the basis of the successes that have happened in the last 5 years, to continue my efforts. So, for a meeting like this, and its attendant publicity, and this meeting has had a lot of coverage in the media, thanks to Christine and her staff, I plan to continue my efforts to bring the darker side of medicine to the attention of the American public, to convince people that whenever the outcome was not what they thought it should be, to immediately get a hold of their records, review the records themselves, review them with another doctor, and review them with a lawyer. Because, as far as I'm concerned, we doctors should welcome malpractice suits, because if I gauge the anger of patients correctly, it's the malpractice awards that are standing between us and being murdered. So, so I will continue my effort in the field of cancer to promote the theory that physicians are the major cause of cancer, that until we get rid of the religion of modern medicine, we will never be able to solve any of the problems of cancer, regardless of the correctness of our theories, whether it's chelation, whether it's chromosomal breaks, or any other theory. And I will continue my effort to support President Reagan's administration in trying to make the cost of obtaining medical care so expensive that nobody will be able to afford to go to the doctor. Thank you very much.